3. Alone in Gethsemane. After all was still and quiet about the camp, Jesus, taking Peter, James, and John, went a short way up a nearby ravine, where he had often before gone to pray and commune. The three apostles could not help recognizing that he was grievously oppressed. Never before had they observed their master to be so heavy laden and sorrowful. When they arrived at the place of his devotions, he bade the three sit down and watch with him while he went off about a stone's throw to pray. And when he had fallen down on his face, he prayed, "My Father, I came into this world to do your will, and so have I. I know that the hour has come to lay down this life in the flesh, and I do not shrink therefrom, but I would know that it is your will that I drink this cup. Send me the assurance that I will please you in my death, even as I have in my life." The Master remained in a prayerful attitude for a few moments, and then, going over to the three apostles, he found them sound asleep, for their eyes were heavy, and they could not remain awake. As Jesus awoke them, he said, "What? Can you not watch with me, even for 1 hour? Cannot you see that my soul is exceedingly sorrowful, even to death, and that I crave your companionship?" After the three had aroused from their slumber, the Master again went apart by himself and, falling down on the ground, again prayed, "Father, I know it is possible to avoid this cup. All things are possible with you. But I have come to do your will, and while this is a bitter cup, I would drink it, if it is your will." And when he had thus prayed, a mighty angel came down by his side and, speaking to him, touched him and strengthened him. When Jesus returned to speak with the three apostles, he again found them fast asleep. He awakened them, saying, "In such an hour I need that you should watch and pray with me. All the more do you need to pray, that you enter not into temptation. Wherefore do you fall asleep when I leave you?" And then for a third time the Master withdrew and prayed, "Father, you see my sleeping apostles. Have mercy upon them. The spirit is indeed willing, but the flesh is weak. And now, O Father, if this cup may not pass, then would I drink it. Not my will, but yours be done." And when he had finished praying, he lay for a moment prostrate on the ground. When he arose and went back to his apostles, once more he found them asleep. He surveyed them and, with a pitying gesture, tenderly said, "Sleep on now and take your rest. The time of decision is past. The hour is now upon us wherein the Son of Man will be betrayed into the hands of his enemies." As he reached down to shake them that he might awaken them, he said, "Arise, let us be going back to the camp, for behold, he who betrays me is at hand, and the hour has come when my flock shall be scattered. But I have already told you about these things." During the years that Jesus lived among his followers, they did indeed have much proof of his divine nature. But just now are they about to witness new evidences of his humanity. Just before the greatest of all the revelations of his divinity, his resurrection, must now come the greatest proofs of his mortal nature, his humiliation and crucifixion. Each time he prayed in the garden, his humanity laid a firmer faith hold upon his divinity. His human will more completely became one with the divine will of his Father. Among other words spoken to him by the mighty angel was the message that the Father desired his Son to finish his earth bestowal by passing through the creature experience of death, just as all mortal creatures must experience material dissolution in passing from the existence of time into the progression of eternity. Earlier in the evening it had not seemed so difficult to drink the cup, but as the human Jesus bade farewell to his apostles and sent them to their rest, the trial grew more appalling. Jesus experienced that natural ebb and flow of feeling which is common to all human experience, and just now he was weary from work, exhausted from the long hours of strenuous labor and painful anxiety concerning the safety of his apostles. While no mortal can presume to understand the thoughts and feelings of the incarnate Son of God at such a time as this, we know that he endured great anguish and suffered untold sorrow, for the perspiration rolled off his face in great drops. He was at last convinced that the Father intended to allow natural events to take their course. He was fully determined to employ none of his sovereign power as the supreme head of a universe to save himself. The assembled hosts of a vast creation are now hovered over this scene under the transient joint command of Gabriel and the personalized adjuster of Jesus. The division commanders of these armies of heaven have repeatedly been warned not to interfere with these transactions on earth unless Jesus himself should order them to intervene. The experience of parting with the apostles was a great strain on the human heart of Jesus. This sorrow of love bore down on him and made it more difficult to face such a death as he well knew awaited him. He realized how weak and how ignorant his apostles were, and he dreaded to leave them. He well knew that the time of his departure had come, but his human heart longed to find out whether there might not possibly be some legitimate avenue of escape from this terrible plight of suffering and sorrow. And when it had thus sought escape and failed, it was willing to drink the cup. The divine mind of Michael knew he had done his best for the 12 apostles, but the human heart of Jesus wished that more might have been done for them before they should be left alone in the world. Jesus' heart was being crushed. He truly loved his brethren. He was isolated from his family in the flesh. One of his chosen associates was betraying him. His father Joseph's people had rejected him and thereby sealed their doom as a people with a special mission on earth. His soul was tortured by baffled love and rejected mercy. It was just one of those awful human moments when everything seems to bear down with crushing cruelty and terrible agony. Jesus' humanity was not insensible to this situation of private loneliness, public shame, and the appearance of the failure of his cause. All these sentiments bore down on him with indescribable heaviness. In this great sorrow, his mind went back to the days of his childhood in Nazareth and to his early work in Galilee. At the time of this great trial, there came up in his mind many of those pleasant scenes of his earthly ministry. And it was from these old memories of Nazareth, Capernaum, Mount Hermon, and of the sunrise and sunset on the shimmering Sea of Galilee that he soothed himself as he made his human heart strong and ready to encounter the traitor who should so soon betray him. Before Judas and the soldiers arrived, the Master had fully regained his customary poise. The spirit had triumphed over the flesh. Faith had asserted itself over all human tendencies to fear or entertain doubt. The supreme test of the full realization of the human nature had been met and acceptably passed. Once more the Son of Man was prepared to face his enemies with equanimity and in the full assurance of his invincibility as a mortal man unreservedly dedicated to the doing of his Father's will.